Hi, this is Dan Vicaro from the Georgetown Hoyas. You are listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast on Inside Lacrosse.
Coming to you from the IOP Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast, featuring Inside Lacrosse, ESPN, and Big Ten Network analyst. You know him from TV. I know him from back in the day, Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. Dixie, it is go time.
I can tell you are fired up. You are definitely in postseason mode. I love it.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. There's an exciting slate of games. Before we get started with the previews, what's your first impression of the bracket?
First, that was a sentence where I wish you had a slur, because you said it's an exciting slate of games. It would have been great to hear you say an exciting slate of games. That would have been really funny,
okay.
but I digress. As far as the bracket goes, I think the committee did a fairly good job. I was never under the impression that Syracuse was getting a home game. I didn't think Syracuse was a lock for the tournament, quite frankly. I thought that between Syracuse, Maryland, and Cornell, it was going to be a dogfight for those last two spots, those last two at-larges. So I'm actually pleased that Syracuse got put on the road. I do not like the fact that Yale and Penn could potentially meet in the quarterfinal. I think that's ridiculous. These are two bona fide national champion contenders, championship weekend contenders. I don't think they should be anywhere near each other until the semifinals potentially. But other than that, I think the committee did a fairly good job. I think that they created a couple compelling first-round matchups. Syracuse-Loyola is going to be a terrific one. Towson-Maryland is another one that's going to be really, really good. And Notre Dame-Hopkins, I think, is a very intriguing first-round matchup. But then you also have Georgetown-Yale and Army and Penn, which are really, Yale hasn't played Georgetown since 2011. Army hasn't played Penn, I think it's been since 1984, if my research is correct. So I think the committee overall did a nice job. I know that's a really long answer to your question, but I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I thought their work was fairly easy to look at. Once Cornell lost in the semifinals of the Ivy League tournament, it made it a lot easier for them and took out some other scenarios, RPI-wise and head-to-head, that changed everything, kind of laid it out in a way that wasn't going to be too difficult for them.
I agree. I feel bad for Cornell. I thought they had a tremendous body of work, but not everybody can make it. And I still am a huge believer in the AQs, because we're seeing lacrosse programs pump resources, pump funds, life into their respective lacrosse programs, because they have an opportunity to make the NCAA tournament. So, it is painful. Is Cornell better than probably half the AQs in the field, if not more? More than likely, but that's what you sign up for. You know what you're getting into. Feel bad for High Point as well. But when you looked at the metrics, even though they had the wins over Duke and Virginia, when you look at the metrics, strength of schedule and RPI were way behind some of the other at-large candidates and eventually the teams that they took. It's going to be an exciting first round of games, and I'm excited to be working this weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah. Felt particularly disappointed for High Point. They had a wonderful season. And as you know, we've talked about this a couple times, Meg Clothier on our staff, her brother's on the team. Colin Clothier is a short, stick defensive midfielder. He's a sophomore. A bunch of his buddies have worked at our events in the summertime.
He's a loyal Don.
Yeah. Great family. So I've been following that team all year, and it was really disappointing. One of the interesting things was Patrick McEwen, Lax Film Room guy on our staff, ran the numbers and had an article earlier in the week that was really interesting about what ifs. And even if High Point would have beaten Jacksonville and beaten St. John's and only lost in the championship game of the Southern Conference, they would not have made the tournament based on the existing criteria. Their RPI would have just been too low, even with wins over Duke and Virginia, which is pretty incredible when you think about that their only chance is through the automatic qualifier. And maybe, just maybe, there is something wrong with the system if you can have an undefeated regular season with two high-profile wins on the road in the non-conference and still not make it if you don't get that AQ. So it's something to think about, and perhaps a change should be in the works to rectify that situation if it happened in the future.
Well, three things of what you bring up. One, Patrick McEwen did an outstanding job of the bracketology, RPIs, along with the rest of the guys, you know, McNair, Terry Foy. I was following Patrick McEwen on Twitter especially close last weekend because every couple of games or after every day of competition, he would update the RPI. And even though it was unofficial, it was spot on. So hats off to him. I thought he did a great job. Second, I do believe the RPI is a flawed metric to use in college lacrosse. I think it works in college basketball when you have hundreds of teams playing, when you only have a sample size of 70-some. In men's Division I lacrosse, I think it is a flawed metric. And then third, a lot of people say, let's expand the tournament. Already the ratio of NCAA tournament spots compared to playing Division I teams that play men's lacrosse, the ratio is already out of whack. So in order to expand the field, in order to make it a larger tournament, we need other Division I teams to pick up the sport. And that would be huge for the game. I mean, we've seen the explosion in the women's game. The women, I believe, have 100. I always get this number wrong, but I know it's at least 115, 120 teams.
116.
They have 28. 116?
Yeah.
So look, I could have been on the Price is Right and won with 115. They have about 28 teams make their tournament. And that's what they're, you know, what they're drawing off of with a pool of 116. So we need men's lacrosse to expand. I know Bill Tierney's mentioned it many, many times. All the schools that, all the Title IX stuff and other reasons that schools do not start lacrosse, we got to get past all that. It would be great to see an expansion once more in the Big Ten. It would be great to see the SEC, the Pac-12, schools like that pick up expansion in the ACC. That would be unbelievable for the game, and it would open up more opportunity for teams to make the NCAA tournament.
Well said, Dix. All right, let's get to these first-round games. A lot of action to cover. You have created an awesome guide for each game, our first-round tournament preview, which is posted on InsideLacrosse.com. Go there to check out Dix's analysis and expert opinion on these games. So let's start with we'll go chronologically. How about we do it that way? We'll start with Saturday, May 11 games. First game of the day at noon, Syracuse at number 8 seed Loyola.
Yeah, so what I like to do is I like to look at the series history and when the last time these two teams played each other for all 8 of these games. And surprisingly, it's been 2009 was the last time Syracuse and Loyola tangled. They used to play regularly back in the 90s and then the early 2000s. Syracuse has a 3-0 all-time record against Loyola in the postseason. Most notably was that 1990 championship game where the Gates and company beat the upstart Greyhounds. Look, Syracuse is 4-2 outside the dome in 2019. Who can forget that 7 or 8 game homestand that they had in the friendly confines of the Carrier Dome to begin 2019? The start of this game is going to be critical to the Orange. Evergreen Ridley Athletic Complex is going to be rocking. Great fan base, great environment. So the first couple of minutes in this contest are going to be really important. And how is each defense going to play? Loyola looked very pedestrian against Army in the Patriot League semifinals last week. Johnny Sirdick did a number on Pat Spencer. I thought that the Greyhounds didn't share the ball the way they normally do. I thought they were a little too one-on-one dependent. Can they change that? And will Syracuse put some wrinkles in to limit that? On the other side, You've got a Loyola team that I think has to be really cognizant of the Syracuse midfield. The players, Jamie Trimboli, Brendan Curry, I think, is a first-team All-American. I think he's sensational. Buttermore is another one that's playing very, very well. So I think both of these defenses are going to be key. And then we're going to be treated to two of the better long-stick midfielders in the game. I think Brett Kennedy is the best in the country, and Ryan McNulty of Loyola is not far behind them. So this game should be fast-paced, up and down, and it should be an entertaining way to kick off the weekend.
Absolutely. Our next game on the slate is at 2:30, Georgetown. 13-4, winners of the Big East Conference will go to Yale to play the number 5 seeded and defending champion Bulldogs, who are 12-3.
Yale holds the all-time series advantage 9-0. Hint to both lacrosse SIDs, create something in your on your website, all-time results against opponents. It'll be much easier for me to do my research and everybody else to do their research, quite honestly. And Yale, you're a national champion now. You deserve it. All kidding aside, but not really, this is a really interesting matchup. Andy Shea and Kevin Warren are very, very close friends. They are both branches off the coaching tree of Bob Schillinglaw, and they have a very, very close relationship. The last time these two programs played was 2011. Yale won 13-8. But I think both offenses are going to have to be really crisp in this game, because you have two defenses that are big, they're athletic, and they're talented, but they also give you opportunities to score goals. And I think for both of these squads, you got to take full advantage. I love the attack of Yale with Jackson Morrill, Gaudette on the inside, Brandow, the Fritz, brother against brother, the Brandow brothers.
That's right.
Attackman for Yale versus the goaltender for Georgetown, both these young men out of Baltimore Boys Latin School. It'll be interesting to see how Yale defends Daniel Beccaro and Jake Carraway. I think this is the most dynamic attack tandem that the Elis have played since they played Penn State, Grant Amon, and Mac O'Keefe back in February. So this is going to be a different animal that the, with all due respect to the Ivy League ball clubs, Cornell in particular, with their combination of Patterson and Teat, but, or Peterson and Teat, but this is going to be an interesting matchup. So Yale's going to win most of the faceoffs like they normally do with T.D. Erlin, but when Georgetown does get possession, using Beccaro and Carraway, and then you also have Lucas Wittenberg in the midfield and some other weapons, I think they're going to have some opportunity to score some goals.
Well, I had a chance earlier this week to sit down and talk to Georgetown senior and Big East attackman of the year, Dan Beccaro, and here's our conversation. We're joined on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast by Georgetown senior Dan Beccaro. Dan, welcome into the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Hey, congratulations on a great regular season in which your Hoyas posted 13 victories, closed out with 5 straight wins, and won your second consecutive Big East title. Hey, after missing the NCAA playoffs for a while for the Hoyas, your team's playing in its second straight big dance. How's that feel?
It's unbelievable. It's really hard to describe. You know, it's what we dreamed of when we were kids and everything. So it's definitely a really cool experience. And last year it was tough to lose in the first round. But, we learned a lot from it. And, you know, hopefully we can go further this year.
Yeah, so you and your senior class have really left its mark on the Georgetown program and the record book. This season, you've tied the school record with 13 victories, and you will personally lead Georgetown as the school's all-time leading goal scorer. I know you still have a great opportunity in front of you, and you're long from being done, but how would you sum up your time on the Hilltop and what your class has accomplished?
It's been pretty special. Coming in the first 2 years, it was a little tough. We didn't have winning records. Last year the seniors stepped up and they took over the team, and we learned a lot from those first 3 seasons here at Georgetown. So it's been a roller coaster ride, but I've loved every moment of it. I wouldn't have changed it for everything. It helped me grow up, and I made some of the best friends that I'll have for the rest of my life. So It's definitely been a special year, and like you said, it's not done yet. So hopefully, I'm hoping to make some more memories.
Great answer. Hey, you personally missed the postseason last year with an injury. How difficult was that for you to handle, not being able to play and be out there with your teammates? And what did you take away from that experience?
Yeah, it's not something that I wished upon. You know, it was tough to hear, and like I was always optimistic after it happened until I got the MRI. You know, I found out what it was, and I realized, you know, like it is what it is. It's life. You know, you're gonna have bumps in the road. And everything. So I just had to accept a new role. And that was just cheering on my teammates and trying to help them out throughout practice, throughout the game, and trying to be like another coach. So, it was difficult, but I had guys that were there to back me up since right after it happened. They were always there for me. They took care of me, and, you know, they made me feel a part of everything, which was really special. Yeah, it was actually, you know, another learning experience for me, you know, to miss that and to miss the Big East tournament the first time we make it. And watching on the sidelines and watching them win and everything, it was unbelievable. It was really cool, and you know, it made me want to play in it the next year. So I had to work really hard and get back to where I was.
Sure, that motivated you in the off season.
Yeah.
So you referenced before a heartbreaking loss in overtime in the first round last year to Johns Hopkins. What do you think the team learned from that, and what's different this year as you get set for the first round again?
Well, a majority of our team has already, you know, played in a playoff game. So I think from last year we learned, yeah, it was a really tough loss, and we wish it turned out the other way. But, you know, we have the experience, and now we know what it feels like to lose in a playoff game. And, you know, as seniors, we don't want to end our season this Saturday. We want to go as far as we can. So it definitely taught us a lot. But, I think it makes us a little bit more hungry.
Your running mate, Jake Caraway, was good last year as a sophomore, but he's really busted out this season as a junior. What's the most impressive thing about his game?
He's been unbelievable since the day he stepped on campus. That kid, he's a true leader. And since he came here freshman year, you know, he was always being a leader and taking over. So we always knew this kid was going to be an unbelievable player. And I'm psyched that he's a junior because he's going to have another year next year. And he's a special player. I learn new things from him every day, and I couldn't say enough good things about him. He's a competitor, and he loves winning just as much as all of us. So, he's a great teammate and a great friend.
Another one of your classmates, Lucas Wittenberg, has had an awesome season at midfield, and junior Massey Bucci has had a breakout junior year. Outside of those two upperclassmen, though, most of the production at the midfield has come from some young guys. What's been the key to blending that youth, especially in the midfield?
You know, they came in here pretty confident, and they play with confidence, and you know, we trust them as much as anyone, and you know, they're great players. They're so talented and so smart, and they're always looking to get better by doing extra reps and you know, going and watching film. So they're like sponges, and they learn a lot from us, and they always are taking in things. So, you know, we trust everyone on this team, and those guys in the midfield have been playing really well. And we just need to keep on rolling.
All right, let's turn our attention to your opponent this week. You'll travel to Yale to play the defending champs. What have you seen from them, and what do the Hoyas need to do to get the W this week and advance to the quarterfinals?
Yale's a spectacular team, you know, the defending national champs and everything. So they got a lot of talent, a lot of stars. They're a hardworking team, and they play really hard. And I think just for us, you know, we just focus on ourselves. We've been doing it all season. And, you know, we focus on the things that we do right and try to get better at little things. You know, I think that's when we play our best. So we've been focusing on that all year, and we just got to continue doing that.
We could see a Brandow versus Brandow matchup. Have you talked to Chris at all about this?
He's stoked. He's very excited. They've been, you know, they're twins, so they grew up together, and they're brothers, so it's going to be really competitive between them. I'm sure they texted each other right after the selection show, and I'm sure they're both really excited.
Hey, I got some rapid-fire questions to wrap this up. You ready?
Yep.
What players did you emulate as a kid?
I grew up watching Steel Stanlick. I loved the way he played, just took over games. I was a big fan of Steel.
Who's the best Ward Melville player ever?
Matt Moffitt. I mean, I'm pretty sure he holds the records for Ward Melville and everything. So, yeah, he was a stud.
If I'm coming down to Georgetown to watch a game, where should I go to eat before the game?
I go to Tombs. It's kind of where everyone goes before games, and you know, it's like a pub. You get some good burgers and things like that. So, yeah, I'd say the Tombs.
All right. What's the best road trip in the Big East, and why?
This is actually tough. I'd have to say St. John's because it's Long Island. I'm going back to Long Island. I got to go home, so I love it there.
Good. Next Thursday is Georgetown's commencement. What's next for Dan Beccaro after graduation?
I'll be in New York City. I'll be working and, you know, hopefully playing some more lacrosse. It's going to be different not being at school and playing college lacrosse anymore, but it's a new stage of my life, and it'll be a cool experience.
All right, last question. I ask every senior this that I interview. What's the best thing about Georgetown University that doesn't have to do with lacrosse?
I would have to say, you know, the friendships that you make here. You meet some really cool people. So I'd say it's a really great place. You're right in D.C., and you have Georgetown, its own little town. So there's a lot to do, and you know, you meet a lot of great people. So I'd say it's just the experience overall.
Well, Dan, good answer, and congratulations again on an awesome season. Big East Attacker of the Year. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck to you against Yale on Saturday afternoon.
All right. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Moving right along, Dix. The next game, Army, West Point, 13-4. Winners of the Patriot League automatic qualifier travel to Franklin Field to play number 4-seeded Penn at 5 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah, how about this game? And hats off to the Black Knights for going into Baltimore and winning the Patriot League championship. And they did it based on their defense. This is a team, it's a program built on defense. Johnny Surdick, Griffin Schultz, A.J. Barreto, the goaltender. Last time these two programs tangled, 2009, Penn won 11-10. But the last meeting in the NCAAs was 1984 when Army beat the Quakers 8-7 and went to the national semifinals, where they were beaten by Syracuse by a couple of goals. So this is definitely a very intriguing game here in the first round. Army does not face off well, but they were able to get by Loyola and Lehigh, two teams that do face off pretty well last weekend. So we'll see if they can do it three games in a row, because Kyle Gallagher for Penn is playing incredible. How will Army be able to defend Penn's offense? I mean, this is Sam Hanley, Tyler Dunn, Simon Mathias. This is a group that can score goals, and they can score goals in a hurry, but they give up a lot of goals as well. I think Penn is the favorite in this game, but I think if Army can hang around and be within striking distance in the fourth quarter, it's anybody's ball game. And I think you could say that probably for any of these games, but I just feel like Army, the deeper they go in the games and the closer they are, they might be the most dangerous team with respect to being able to make saves and get defensive stops. So this will be a great game in Philadelphia on Saturday.
Our final Saturday game at 7:30 on Saturday evening, Robert Morris, the surprise winner of the Northeast Conference automatic qualifier, travels to number 3-seed Virginia, winners of the ACC.
And these guys are no stranger to each other. 2017, Virginia won the last matchup 13-7, and the number 3 seed is the highest for Virginia since 2010. So congratulations, Lars Tiffany and the Virginia Cavaliers. This is a Robert Morris team that is hot. I believe they're on an 8-game win streak, and they've started out 1-7, I want to say. So for a team that graduated, a ton of players, won the Northeast Conference last year, and gave everything Maryland they could handle in the first round in College Park a year ago, welcome back Bobby Moe, because you guys have earned it. And this is going to be a really, really interesting game. I think both of these teams have very striking similarities. They both love to push the tempo, get up and down the field. They can score goals quickly. And both get out the slow starts in 2019. Virginia started out, 1-2, I want to say? 1-2, 1-3. And Robert Morris is 1-7. Now, I know 1-7 is a lot steeper than 1-2, But still, they got off to slow starts. And both of these teams have shown the ability to come back. The Cardiac Cavaliers have several come-from-behind victories. Robert Morris lived on the edge. I believe the last three games, they were trailing going into the third quarter of their last three ball games that they eventually won. So, look, there's a lot to be said about this game. Who can control the middle of the field? That's going to be key. Who can win those ground ball battles? Who can win those 50-50s? Robert Morris has a couple of terrific scorers in Tyson Gibson and Ryan Smith. Alex Hager, a preseason All-American who really didn't have a great 2018, was the MVP of the Northeast Conference, or played very well in the Northeast Conference tournament last week. But, you know, Virginia's going to be favored. They need to shoot well. They need to get good goaltending, which they have been getting. And they need to enjoy the home field advantage at Klöckner. So, Virginia Robert Morris, good way to wrap up the first day of the first round.
And those are the four previews for the Saturday games. We'll be right back after these words with Sunday's games. All right, Dick, so let's lead off on Sunday's games, a game I believe you will be calling from State College. UMBC, how about the Retrievers? They'll take on number one seed Penn State, winners of the Big Ten Championship for the first time, 14-1 at noon on Sunday.
Wow. I mean, what else can you say about the Retrievers, a team that was, what were they, 3-8 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Had to win just to make the AE tournament, the America East tournament. They do that. They beat Hartford, come from behind to do that. 4-8, then they knock off number one seed Stony Brook, number two seed Vermont. What's that? 6-8, and they go to Marist in front of a very nice crowd, a very energetic crowd in Poughkeepsie, and knock off the Red Foxes. So hats off to UMBC, Dog Nation, down there in Catonsville. But now they get the number one seed, the number one team in the land, the Penn State Nittany Lions. Last time these two teams' programs met, 2003, UMBC won 12-10. Penn State holds the all-time series advantage, 14-7. Biggest question here, Dan, can UMBC slow down this Penn State offense? Grain Ament, Mac O'Keefe, Nick Spillane, Jack Kelly, they just come at you and come at you and come at you. They're relentless. They really, really are. So will the Retrievers be able to slow down the offense of Penn State? And Penn, UMBC's got to break this game down into chunks, like 3 5-minute segments. Okay, can we win these 3 minutes? Can we win these 3 minutes? What can we do in this 5-minute stretch? Break it down into bite-sized chunks throughout this game to have an opportunity. But let's not forget, I know we've said this many times, Penn State still has never won an NCAA tournament game. They are heavily favored in this game. But you better believe that there's been some hearkening to that 2018 UMBC basketball team that knocked off number one seed and highly ranked Virginia. It's not going to be lost on Penn State, who's coming in to Panzer this weekend. Should be a great environment. Panzermonium is going to be running wild, and it'll be fun to call this game.
Dix, the next game on Sunday afternoon at 2:30 is maybe, besides the Hopkins game, the game I'm most interested in watching. Maryland, 11-4, will travel to United Stadium in Towson to take on the number 6 seeded Tigers.
These two teams used to play all the time. I called many of these games for WMAR with Scott Garceau back in yesteryear. And every year, Maryland Towson was always one of the highlights. If for nothing else, Maryland is big brother in the state school system in the state of Maryland. And Towson is that little brother that's always looking to knock the heck out of his older brother. And the interesting thing about this series is Towson has won the only two meetings between these schools and NCAA postseason play. 1991 semifinals, remember that game up in the dome with Tigers such as Glenn Smith and Rob Scheck. Carl Biernick was a great defender. Steve Kisslinger against a Maryland team that was favored to win in that game. And then 10 years later, 2001, the NCAA quarterfinals in College Park. Justin Barry and Kyle Campbell knocked off the Terps to go to championship weekend. Will it be 3-0? I know Towson's chomping at the bit. I know they're excited that Maryland has to come to them. both locker rooms, they're going to be preaching toughness and intensity. Trust me. Natalyn, Tillman, toughness, intensity is going to be repeated throughout, has been repeated throughout this week, will be repeated on Sunday as well. Defensive organization for both these teams is critical. It'll be key. Maryland looked completely discombobulated against Hopkins those last two games. Towson has a tendency sometimes to have some lapses. Tyler Canto is going to be big in this one between the pipes for the Tigers. Alex Woodall, his health is up in the air. Will he play? And if he does, how is he going to be? Is he going to be durable enough to take every face off, every other face off, every third face off? You know, what's the situation going to be? But this, I'm excited, just like you are. I'm excited to watch the Tigers and the Terps get after it again.
Yeah, I'd buy a ticket to this one. The next game, Richmond Spiders, winners of the Southern Conference Championship automatic qualifier, will travel to Durham to take on the number 2-seeded Duke Blue Devils, 11-4 overall, at 5 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah, Spiders go into High Point and knock off the Panthers in convincing fashion to take the SoCon championship. So welcome back to the NCAA's Richmond. And Dan Chiamatti is a 2002 graduate of the Duke University. So a little bit of facing off against his alma mater. Last two times these team met, and this is the only rematch of the season that's taking place in the first round. Back on March 1st, Duke won 11-7 against Richmond. So this is a Richmond team that is very good defensively, especially at the pole position, the ropes. And they're going to have to find a way to slow down Brad Smith and Mekhi Montgomery. When that happens, teams have some success against Duke. Just ask Notre Dame in their ACC semifinal win a couple weeks ago. Sean Menges is the guy for the Spiders. And Jack Rustbolt, the goaltending position for Richmond had been a little bit of a revolving door, but Rustbolt was fantastic in the SoCon tournament last weekend. I believe he might have been the MVP of that tournament. If not, he was in consideration for it. Richmond does not face off well. Duke will have a market advantage in that situation. And they've got an outstanding defense, the Blue Devils do. Cade Van Raphorst and J.T. Giles-Harris are terrific. And that's good news, because when you're playing against Ryan Lansbury and Teddy Hatfield, you need to be on top of your game. So Richmond's going to have to find some depth of scoring outside of those two attackmen. Duke is going to have to find depth of scoring outside of Brad Smith and Mekhi Montgomery. But I know I've been saying this about a lot of these games, man, but this one also very intriguing and should be entertaining.
And the final game of the weekend in the featured Sunday night spot on ESPNU, Johns Hopkins Blue Jays, 8-7, have been playing much better the last few weeks, will travel to South Bend to take on the number 7-seeded Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
4-1. Hopkins is 4-1 all time against the Fighting Irish. And all these games have taken place in the NCAA tournament. The last time these teams tangled, 2007, under the lights at Homewood Field, under the extra lights, because they brought in some portable lights as well to make it show better on television. Hopkins won that game 11-10. But plain and simple, Dan, in this game, key's going to be goaltending. Both teams have gotten shaky, inconsistent goaltending throughout 2019. It's not about what goalie can make 15 saves or 20 saves. It's who can make that big save at the critical moment. And I think goaltending, first and foremost, is going to be incredibly paramount between Johns Hopkins and Notre Dame. Notre Dame defense is going to have their hands full with Joey Epstein and Cole Williams. They both had great weekends in the Big Ten tournament. Meanwhile, I think the midfield defense for Hopkins is going to have to be really, really good to counter Brian Costabile, Wheaton, Jack Abois, and some of the other outstanding midfielders that Notre Dame has. So the weekend should wrap up in awesome fashion with these two getting after each other under the lights at Arlotta. And I think this is the first time ever that Johns Hopkins has been out to South Bend for a real game. So that's exciting. Should be a great game.
It should definitely be a great game.
Sorry, how about the scuttlebutt that Ryder Garnsmeer might be playing in this game?
That is intriguing.
We'll see.
It is intriguing. Well, I had the opportunity to talk to Blue Jays head coach Dave Petromala earlier this week and talked about the Ryder Garnsey situation and the possibility of playing him and a lot of other great things. And here's my conversation with Coach Petro. We're joined by Johns Hopkins head coach Dave Petromala. Coach, welcome into the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sorry, Mark is not going to be able to join us. He's doing his real job this morning.
It's okay. I've seen plenty of Dixie last couple weeks with the Big Ten with the Big Ten tour. So saying that he's got to make a living and do some other things.
All right. I didn't think you would mind. Coach, first of all, congratulations on another NCAA tournament appearance, now the 47th for the Blue Jays. I think sometimes Hopkins fans in particular take postseason play for granted, but it's really a special thing, especially for each individual team because it's a new group every year. But, you know, as fans of Denver, Cornell, and High Point can attest to, nothing is guaranteed.
Well, there's no question. Nothing is guaranteed. And quite frankly, anything that's achieved these days, and this is not in any way, shape, or form, belittle teams, whether Hopkins or others of the past, but times are very different. And the challenge that a team faces now to make its way to the NCAA tournament, you know, is far greater. The level of competition, the depth of rosters, you know, the resources that are being poured in particular, you know, to support by some of these your schools, making the NCAA playoffs is no easy task. And when you look at it from a Hopkins perspective, do it with a schedule, creates an even greater challenge. I mean, headed into, on Sunday, we boasted number one strength of schedule in the country. That means we played the number one most difficult schedule out there. Teams like Syracuse, Virginia, Towson, Loyola, all these that are in the NCAA tournament. And then you add, the Big Ten, which is, from an RPI standpoint, the second most challenging in the country, it doesn't get any easier. So, while it is an expectation here and a standard here, I think it's very easy to kind of assume and not recognize what these young and, all teams have to put in to earn their way. And quite honestly, you earn your way into the NCAAs. No longer is it to get one big win. That used to be the case. My ML team, when I was there my last year, beat Syracuse in one win, into the NBA. Now it's strength of schedule, good and bad losses, it's RPI. So, while I believe we're battle tested, it is a challenge to work your way into the NBA. And frankly, we talked to guys about what a privilege it is. It's expectation. Yes, it's standard here. That's why guys come here. However, like you said, you can't afford to take anything for granted. And the second that you do, you want sitting at home watching it on television.
Right. Hey, since that first Maryland game in College Park, the Jays almost looked like a different team. And there were people who thought that your backs were against the wall going into that game. Still have a lot to play for this year, but how would you put the season to date into perspective?
Well, easy. It's been a work in progress. You come into the year, and last year we graduated, one of the more dynamic players we've had here at the midfield in Joel Tinney. And then you take, a line mate of his in Britton Vallis. So two seniors that were, that were leading at the midfield. And I don't mean just leading by play, but leading as captain, both captains. You lose a four-year starter, one of the smartest players that we've ever coached here, in Shaq Stanwyck. So he started every game he's been here, with the exception of when he was injured. We lost three really important pieces, to the offensive puzzle after last year. And headed into the season, we knew we would be young and inexperienced at that end. And when it's easy to look at Kyle Warren, Cole Williams, and say, well, yeah, those their experience, sure. But they're in very different roles, in particular Kyle Maher as a captain. You know, he's never had to be a leader because Joel and Shaq were always in before them, John Crowley. Mm-hmm. So, it's been a transition year. It's been a work in progress where now we start a freshman in Joey Epstein attack, a very talented young man. You know, Kyle assumes a new role, and now Cole all of a sudden has to assume a new role. You know, gone is Shaq, who took the number one defender, and now teams have to choose between, you know, Cole and Joey. So it puts a different pressure on Cole. You know, midfield, as I mentioned, you graduate those two seniors and captains and leaders, and now Connor DeSimone, who was a freshman last year, who played, you know, is the guy that saw the most significant minutes at the midfield. You know, Alex Kincannon returns, you know, he comes back from injury, you know, a little while back, you know, but didn't see the same amount of time that Connor did. So our guy at the midfield that has the most significant minutes log is a sophomore.
Right.
And then you have Brett Baskin, who is, a full-time middie now in his first year really starting. Jack Keough, you had Alex Kincannon, who had been running with the second midfield, now spending more time with the first, and then you add some other guys. When you look at it, you know, almost 8 or 9 out of the 12 midfielders that we have are freshmen or sophomores. So there is a lot of inexperience there, and it's led to us being a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're seeing now, you know, is some of that growth. Now these young guys like Epstein are really starting to come on. Evan Zinn is really starting to grow. Matt Naruski at the faceoff X. I mean, we went into the season, I don't think we had a faceoff guy that had more than 30 faceoffs. And yet now these guys are thrown into the fire. In our last 5 games, we faced against some of the best in the country, all of which are in the high 50s, low 60s percentage-wise. So, you know, these young guys have been thrown into the fire, you know, and expected to kind of grow on the run. And I think that's what we're seeing, Dan, is these guys are starting to grow up. Even the more experienced guys are starting to really understand their role and fit into them and feel comfortable in them. And this work in progress is just, you know, continue to grow and improve. And I think that's what you've seen, along with, you know, the emotional part, which is a much better understanding that this group now has as to what it takes for this team, not last year's team, but what it takes for this team to be successful.
Coach, I want to ask you about one of the freshmen. You mentioned Joey Epstein. He's showing all the signs of being a truly special player. His production has been prolific for a freshman. He seems to have earned a leadership position on the team. And last week I interviewed Robert Kuhn, and he told me that he's the hardest working guy on the team. A lot of freshmen are hyped, but when did you guys realize as a coaching staff how special he is, and how good do you think Joey can become?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We thought he was very, very talented coming out of high school, you know, and, you know, early recruiting is no exact science. And, you know, I think the early recruiting, quite frankly, has impacted, and maybe not as positively as we would have all liked, you know, the landscape. It's just easier to make mistakes. And yet he was a home run. From the day we saw him, you know, you could tell he was talented. You could tell he was aggressive, confident, had a solid understanding of the game. But there were some things, Dan, that we didn't know. And, you know, we had heard over the summer prior to his arrival on campus, I received an email from a gentleman who was at a camp that Joey worked at. And he said, "You're going to love this kid. He is out there every single day working on his craft. He lifts every day. He shoots every day. So when he's done with his responsibilities at camp, he's always out there." You know, as a coach, you hear these things and you wonder, well, you know, how true is it? And I got to tell you, we've actually had to ask him to kind of step back a little bit and ease off, as to not wear himself down. You know, we have our week of practice, and every day he's up here before practice doing extra. And every Sunday when I come into the office, at some point in time throughout the day, he's here. So he's one of those guys that, you know, he's not successful just by accident. He's successful because he works hard. You know, I think that's been contagious. You know, Kyle Moore's been that way, a guy out there every day shooting. Cole Williams has been doing that. So I think when we really realized that he had this ability was somewhere through the fall when we just kept seeing him come out. And you just can't not be successful when you have ability and you're working like that. And, right. You know, I've been blessed to coach two guys that I thought were really hard workers in Kyle Harrison and Paul Rabel. And, you know, this kid is very much in the mold of those guys in terms of his desire to be great. But maybe more interestingly, is his desire to be great is so high, yet his desire for this team to succeed is higher than that. And he puts that at the forefront, which is a pretty neat thing.
Absolutely. Hey, let's turn our attention to your opponent this week in the first round. Sunday evening, you're at Notre Dame. Not a team the Blue Jays play a whole lot. Offensively, what have you seen from the Irish, and what will the Hopkins team need to do to slow them down?
Well, you know, number one, they've been very good at the X. You know, they're, you know, close to 60%, if not 60%. You know, they play a quality schedule in the ACC, so it's not like they're facing off against, you know, also Rand. So that's going to be really important is the face-off and wing play. You know, clearly possessions are going to be huge. So ground ball play, as it's been all season, will be critical. You know, in the offensive end for them, you know, Notre Dame's one of those teams where, you know, I don't believe their philosophy is to be overly complicated. I think they do what they do. They do it very well. You know, and they say, look, this is what we do. We're putting our pieces in these places because this is where we think they can be successful. And we're going to focus on these few things and try to be really good at these few things. And we're going to be better at it than you are at what you do. You know, so, you know, for us, it'll be really important that we, you know, that we play good, solid defense, that we make good decisions, you know, when to slide, when not to slide. I mean, the kid Costabile is quite a talent, you know, and Gleason is very talented. Those two has kind of been the mainstays for this Notre Dame offense. And yet now, as we head into the game, we've got to prepare for the potential of Ryder Garnsey, who may all of a sudden become eligible after ineligible a year. You know, we've got to prepare for that. And we've done that. We knew that going in. And have done just that, but that just brings a little bit different dynamic to, you know, to the offense, you know, a bit more of a wild card that's quite talented. So we're going to have to play very good defense against a team that's patient, you know, picks and chooses its time when to push. I think one of the things they do best is ride. So we've got to be prepared for their 10 man. And then obviously whenever you think of Notre Dame, you think of defense, and, they've done a good job there. So we've got to make sure we're able to earn slides and let the ball do a lot of the work for us, which we've done a job with the last few weeks.
I want to ask you some sort of non-lacrosse related questions, if that's all right with you. Earlier this year, a good friend of ours passed away, Hopkins football coach Jim Margraff. I know you guys were close. He was my coach, co-worker later, and a friend of mine. He was a special man, and he impacted so many people's lives. Your relationship with him, like, beyond coaching tips, but what lessons on and off the field were you able to take away from a guy like Jim Margraff?
Well, you know, it was a very sad day when we lost, you know, Coach Mars. You know, and relationship with him was I want to say very behind closed doors, so to speak. We spent a lot of time, you know, earlier in the mornings or later in the evenings or kind of, you know, midday when he was walking by or would stop over, you know, we'd sit and have, you know, a lot of philosophical conversations, you know, less about lacrosse itself and less about football, more about coaching and people and philosophy and, you know, young men, you know, and he is one of the finest men that I've known. You know, I like to say he was such a decent man, you know, and I think that's a word or a statement that's so underused. I feel like when you say someone's a decent man, what a great compliment. And Jimmy was really a decent man. One of the things we talked a lot about was our players and our care for our players. And I can be demonstrative and, you know, pretty intense, but what I don't think people realize is the level of care that I have for our guys. You know, I love them. I may not like what I do all the time, but I love them. And Jimmy and I used to talk a lot about that. We used to talk about how important, you know, helping these guys become men is. And, you know, I know there's so much that's today is so experiential. You know, you want everybody to have a great experience. But part of our responsibility as coaches, and he and I used to talk about this all the time, was helping these guys understand what it means to be a good man, what it means to be a hard worker, you know, to prepare them. You know, and you played for him, and so you know what it's like to be with him, and that he prepared you for when you left Hopkins, and if things didn't go well, to stand on your two feet and pull yourself up by the bootstraps and, you know, and then persevere. You know, we really try to do that here with our young men. And we used to talk about those things all the time. And quite frankly, I miss them. I miss our conversations. And while I know Hopkins football is in great hands, you know, there are a few like Jimmy Markgraff was.
He's one of the best. Coach, on the playing fields, this has been an amazing year for the Johns Hopkins Athletic Department. I mean, many people might not know this, but there's a thing called the Director's Cup that's a measurement of all sports success. And Hopkins is in first place, leading all of the nation in that. All the Division III sports for the spring are in the NCAA tournaments or have won their conference championships. And both the Division I men's and women's lacrosse programs also in the NCAA tournament. So a banner year across the board from the fall all the way through the spring for the Blue Jays. What's it like in the building, showing up to work every day with such a successful group that are all rolling?
Well, you know, I'm often reminded of the standard here and you know, the expectation when I walk into work every day and I walk by a statue of Scott and I see, you know, every day what's expected, not just as a coach and in terms of performance on the field, but as a mentor leader to these young, you know, Hopkins has enjoyed not just this year, but for you know, in recent years, you know, tremendous success in other sports. You know, I think it's one of the greatest hidden gems that people don't know about. You know, people just assume, you know, because it's Division III athletics, other than men and women's lacrosse, that, you know, less the athletes are less serious about things, or the coaches are less serious. And quite frankly, could not be further from the truth. We've got some tremendous athletes here in our other sports. Our track and field across the country has been phenomenal. Football had their greatest year school history this past year. You know, we've got a base coach who's been here for years, and Bob Babb, and he continues to just find different ways to achieve success. You know, our wrestling program and our volleyball programs are as best as they've ever been. You know, men and women's soccer. So across the board, you know, on the basketball court, we're blessed with really people here. And I am blessed to work in a department with coaches, you know, that they're committed to what they're doing. They're committed to their players. They're committed to their craft, and their young men and women are really special. So, it's been a privilege, and as an alum, I'm proud to be around it and a part of it.
Yeah, that leads me into my final question for you, Coach. And again, I appreciate your time today. The expectations are high at Johns Hopkins, academically, athletically, and nobody understands those probably like you do, because it's your alma mater and you're the head lacrosse coach where the pressure is the most intense. What does that mean to you personally to be the flag bearer for the Hopkins program and be responsible for something that means so much to you, but to so many other people as well?
Well, you know, it's a privilege, you know, and I don't take that privilege lightly. I understand the responsibility it bears. I understand how many are impacted by it and how passionate they are about, you know, Hopkins lacrosse and the success of this program. I'm also keenly aware that the landscape changed, and yet expectations around this program don't, you know, and we've got to bear an understanding of the landscape as these days and still work, achieve, and meet, you know, a standard of excellence that, you know, is critical to me. You know, more importantly, or most importantly, is success of young men and their success, you know, as people in the classroom, you know, and their development as leaders, you know, and obviously as they leave here as contributors to, you know, to the community at large, you know, those are all important things. And our goal here, you know, is to develop these young men, you know, on every platform, not just the academic platform, not just the athletic, but to help them, you know, become the best husbands, you know, employers that they can be. It's a grave responsibility that, you know, comes with a lot of pressure. And I would say, you know, to the outside, everybody thinks the pressure is external. You know, and if there's one pressure from the external portion of things than the internal, then we're not doing our job. And I'm blessed with a wonderful staff, and Bob Benson and Bill Dwan and Tim Obransky and Larry Quinn. For those four, are Hopkins guys, all are passionate about this institution, about the young men that we work with and the program that we're privileged to be a part of. It's one of the reasons why I hired those guys, is they are, you know, be a little bit more invested because it's been such an important part of our adult life. But we all, you know, take this responsibility very seriously. We feel blessed. We're excited. You know, some years clearly are more successful than others, you know, and the challenges that we face as a program are far greater today than ever before. You know, being in the Big Ten, you know, with our peers and the resources that are important. And yet we still continue to compete. We still continue to compete on a national level. You know, we just accomplished something this year that no other Hopkins team has done. We beat Maryland times in 364 days and back to back. You know, we've entered a new realm of Hopkins lacrosse in the Big Ten. You know, what an unbelievable thing for our players and our staff to be a part of. You know, no one is really excited to lose our independence, but the land dictated that we needed to change. And to be a part of that change, and now in its fifth year, to have played for three Big Ten championships and won two of them, has just been spectacular. So we're excited to be here, Dan. We love being here. We love the young men that we work for, and certainly have great respect for the institution that we're a part of.
Well, Coach Petromala, thank you for joining us, and definitely best of luck to you this weekend in South Bend.
Well, thanks. Appreciate your time. Always good to catch up with you.
Dix, I really enjoyed that conversation with Petro. Always fun to talk to the Blue Jays head coach and to hear what's going on at Hopkins.
No doubt. And I know it's funny. We talked about some of the other teams, but Hopkins, this time 2 weeks ago, we were just talking about them really being on life support for the NCAA tournament. But what a difference a couple weeks makes. And they'll travel to South Bend for a terrific first round game.
Yeah, I can't wait for the weekend games, especially that last one when Hopkins takes on Notre Dame. And I'll be watching that UMBC Penn State just to see you in action calling that one. So have a great weekend, all right?
Yeah, right on, man. Enjoy all the games, and they're all on ESPNU. They got you covered.
If you like what you heard, please do us a favor and smash that subscribe button, leave a rating, and share it with a friend. You can hit us up on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I am at D_FLY, at DFly. Or you can send me an email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. Also, don't forget to check out the other podcasts here at Inside Lacrosse. We drop a new one every day during the season. Have a great weekend and enjoy the games.